you, friend. These gospel hits, they just keep on coming. Again, this week, our context is critical as we follow along the path that was set out in last week's gospel. You may remember that Jesus had created quite a stir upon entering Jerusalem. There are raucous crowds and a palm parade. And then, the overturning of the money tables of the temple complex, followed by a healing of the blind and the lame. What's even better, though, is that Jesus comes back the next day. And when he does, as you might expect, the religious authorities are waiting for him. And among the many things they want to know is, by what authority are you doing these things? Who gave you this authority? So, like any good religious teacher of the first century, first he answers the question with a question, and then by telling stories, parables to illustrate by image, each one more pointed than the previous. Now, last week we heard the story of a father sending his sons out to work. We heard about one son who worked and the other who didn't. Next week will be a doozy of a story about a king's wedding banquet. But this week we hear a parable about a vineyard owner, his tenants, and a violent struggle over the fruits of the vine. Now, one more time, it's helpful to know the background before we get too far, because Jesus makes some choices in this text that set the frame almost immediately. To start with, this metaphor of a vineyard would have been a familiar one to those who were gathered at the temple in Jerusalem that day, because it's an image that has roots from centuries earlier, when a different empire was menacing the inhabitants of Jerusalem. With the prophet Isaiah, who used the image of the vineyard in this way in his fifth chapter. For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel, and the people of Judah are his pleasant planting. Earlier in that chapter, Isaiah uses this metaphor of a vineyard in it, and it reads kind of like a love poem. That is, until we read on and we see how the prophet continues to gaze upon this vineyard. Isaiah writes, "The Lord expected justice, but saw bloodshed. Righteousness, but heard a cry. Ah, you who joined house to house, who had field to field, until there is room for no one but you, and you are left to live alone in the midst of the land. The Lord of hosts has sworn in my hearing, surely many houses shall become desolate, large and beautiful homes, without inhabitants." The vineyards of Napa and Sonoma, this is it. But you can see, can't you, that Jesus, ever the provocateur, is not inventing anything new. He is holding up this fundamental image one more time so that the religious leadership might be able to see what it is they are doing. And to be very clear, what Jesus is not doing is delivering an eternal condemnation against the Jewish people. I realize that Christians for centuries have abused this text towards that end, exacting terror and suffering along the way. But that reading is a distortion and a warping of what Jesus is doing in this passage. As Susan Eastman has written, here Jesus draws a line within Judaism, but not between Jews and Christians. You see, Jesus is reminding the religious authorities of their responsibility for the vineyard. And from Isaiah's lament, you can see that it was no mistake, right, on that day before when he turned over those tables. We upended that temple economy for the well-being of the people, and the health of this vineyard are intimately connected. So once again, Jesus is taking a time-honored concept like he did with the Sabbath, and like he did with customs around food and around hospitality, and is reinterpreting them to remind everyone, including those in authority, of the radical, vital meanings of these ancient practices. In the words of another scholar, through Jesus' actions and in this parable, Jesus is attempting to drill down through layers of denial down to the level of recognition, tapping a deep vein of contrition that can finally well up to water new life that is fruitful in gospel terms. In other words, he's trying to shake up what are rigid and oppressive systems enough so that they are forced to realize where they are missing the mark. Right? That they cannot miss the effects that their actions are having on the people of God. Now, this isn't John's gospel, right, where Jesus knows everything. But it's clear that Jesus knows that his ultimate confrontation is close at hand. And so, he uses what is shocking imagery to hold a mirror to these distorted practices of the powerful that keep the powerless from their fruit in due season. But much like I talked about last week, this critique that Jesus uses on the authorities cannot simply serve as a condemnation of those past practices. All those chief priests and those Pharisees. If they only knew what we know now. If they only knew Jesus. Friends, 2,000 years later, this parable begs us to wonder, do we really know Jesus? Know Jesus enough to trust. Know Jesus enough to actually allow ourselves to be changed by his ways. Given the state of the world and of the church around us, I don't know that we do. Hear the words from earlier in Matthew's Gospel from the Sermon on the Mount. Be reconciled with your brother or sister. Give to everyone who asks. Love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. Friends, this could not have been easy for the chief priests to hear, just as often it's not easy for us to hear. But it's always the first to tell the story. For time and time again, the writer of the Gospel of Matthew is insistent. He's like obsessed about bearing good fruit. You can even see it in our gospel this morning, but the NRSV kind of obscures this theme by its word choices. But four times in this passage alone, fruit is mentioned, as in, when the time of the fruits had come, and he sent his slaves to the tenants to collect his fruit, and he will lease the vineyard to other tenants who will give him the fruit at the harvest time. And then finally, it will be given to a people that produces the fruits of the kingdom. This is not just about intent. What are our actions bearing? What fruit is being seen? What are we doing with the fruit of our lives? These are the questions of the messengers, the wholehearted ones, the courageous ones, who were sent into the vineyard to remind the tenants of their responsibilities. What do you think it was like to be sent into this vineyard, knowing the fate of your predecessors? What likely awaited you? And still knowing that this message that you bear is true and needs to be told? Martin King, or Rachel Carson, or Cesar Chavez, or Harvey Milk. Is it any surprise that they were met with scorn, hostility, violence, when they attempted to remind us of the story that is different than the survival of the fittest, or the supremacy of the free market, or that retaliation is the only language that speaks to bloodshed? These messengers have repeatedly tried to call us back. No, 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 they've said. We've lost sight, they've cried. This is not how we are to live in this vineyard. This world, this country, this state, this city, this farm, it isn't only yours or only mine to do with however we wish. I am because we are. I am because you are. We are because God is. Friends, perhaps this is it. Over and again, we actually believe that we own the vineyard. By ourselves, for ourselves. Why should we give some of the fruit to what seems to be an absentee landlord, when we can squeeze a few more bottles from these vines for ourselves? Why should we give to others when they can't earn it for themselves? These questions seem to abound wherever we look at the vineyard that is this nation, which is struggling to live by its bedrock beliefs, or the vineyard that is creation, which is groaning under the weight of our insatiable demand, or the vineyard that is our workplaces, under such pressure from the bottom line that our values are slowly compromised. It's just this once, right? Or the vineyard that is our families, yearning for wholeness, but fractured by the frenzied pace of the demands that are placed on all of us, adults and teenagers and children. But the vineyard that is within us, as we struggle to know what we should give, how should we give? We feel much of the same strain and the pull as the tenants did. And yet God has given us, as a people, as the created, God has given us everything we need for all.